Let's see what the stew has in store for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, Gnome Stew's Tabletop Gaming Advice Podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things, the void becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the dauntless Doug Roz, the glorious Greg Gordon, and the kind Kathleen Halperin. Today, we have me, Ange, along with guests Jason Haskins and Mike Mistily, fellow GMs from Matinee Adventures. Today, we're going to talk about the art of running good convention one-shot games. What makes it good, what you can do to give your players a great game. Instead of our get to know a gnome question, we're going to ask Jason and Mike to tell us a little bit about who they are. Mike, I'm going to go with you first.
I've been playing role-playing games both as a player and a game master since I was a teenager in the early 1980s. I'm also a longtime Star Wars nerd, which is part of why what I mostly run for Matinee Adventures is Star Wars games. My day job is as an advertising strategist and a market researcher, and that's a career where I can use a lot of the same storytelling and numbers skills that I use in Game Mastery.
Jason, what about you?
Thanks, Ange. When I'm not working in business strategy using buzzwords, I enjoy spending time with the gaming hobby, specifically board games and tabletop role-playing games. My role-playing experience started in the 90s, and similar to most of that era, was based around D&D. I've played and ran a wide variety of systems and genres over the years, but I'm mostly driven by people and the stories that we choose to tell together.
You guys all know about me, so I'm not going to talk about me. You're always here listening to me talk, so. And if you've been listening for any length of time, you know I love conventions. I've been a regular attendee for around 20 years at this point, and I've seen good games and bad. It's worth having a conversation about what makes a good con game. I have been running games under the Matinee Adventures banner since 2017 because I really respect the effort they put into making sure they bring good games to the table. So let's talk about it. First question, how long have you been running games at conventions? Jason, I'll start with you this time.
Sure. So I started running games at Origins when Matinee Adventures was founded, so about 2009.
So you never ran before that?
Nope. Started with the group and have been running ever since.
That's awesome. What about you, Mike?
So back in the 80s, I GM'd Gen Con a few times, but I really started GMing at conventions in earnest in 2001. And that's when I started playing in the RPGA's organized play living campaigns like Living City, Living Force, and so on. I started out just as a player, but I started GMing RPGA games at conventions soon after that. I joined Matinee Adventures as the GM at the end of 2019, just in time for a global pandemic that shut down in-person conventions for a year.
That was a great time, wasn't it?
It was such a wonderful time.
Fantastic.
I started running games at all in 2005, and probably the first time I ran at a con was 2006, 2007. I kind of flirted back and forth with it because, you know, like part of me wanted to do it, but part of me was like, oh, I'd rather play. And it's really intimidating. And there's a lot of pressure running games for people. So it wasn't until probably the mid 2010s that I really started getting into it more seriously. And hence, joining Matinee Adventures to run games under their banner. So what made you start running at cons? Mike, we'll go with you first.
All right. So when I started playing in the RPGA, I wound up joining a group of fellow players who were spread all over North America and who played in those various RPGA campaigns. We would play together online, and this is before virtual tabletops, before Skype or Zoom. We were playing in AOL Instant Messenger chat rooms. But we'd also play together face-to-face at conventions. And several of us in the group who were experienced game masters would take turns running games for each other, because someone had to. And we also ran for other players at conventions. And all of that was GMing pre-written organized play adventures. About a little over 10 years ago, in 2013, I played in a Matinee Adventures game at Origins, had a great time with it. That led to me playing more of their games, becoming friends with their game masters like Jason, and eventually led to them inviting me to audition as a GM for Matinee Adventures. For Matinee, I run adventures which I write myself, primarily playing Star Wars, but using the Fate Core rule set rather than one of the Star Wars role-playing game sets.
Jason, what about you? Obviously, you started when you started Matinee Adventures.
Yep, absolutely. So I would say that most of my experience prior to running at conventions was running and playing in my local game groups. When I started attending Origins, I quickly identified the variation in delivery of games was an opportunity, which was part of the genesis for Matinee Adventures, basically. I wanted a group where people could sign up for events under which the main focus was on the quality of the experience at the table, not just working through a module.
Yeah, for me, it was really, you know, again, it was the sometimes you'd play a bad game and be like, I could do better than that.
Mm-hmm.
And ended up being like, well, I have these ideas and I don't necessarily want to run a full campaign of this. So I'm going to make a one shot and, you know, put it out there at a convention. And, you know, it just kept spiraling further and further, you know, up the ladder, so to speak. So, Jason, why don't you tell us a little bit about the founding of Matinee Adventures? We've kind of talked a little bit about it, but, you know, I'm pretty proud of being part of this group. So I'd like to talk about where it came from.
Well, Ange, I'm very proud of all of our GMs. So thank you for saying that. So really kind of the story is that after attending Origins, I sat down at a table with Tom and Ed, our other two founding members. We were reviewing the games that we played in over the course of that convention, and a concept was born. We wanted to gather game masters who enjoy entertaining both friends and strangers alike by running high-quality games. I believe that the group's success comes from the heart and creativity that each of our GMs brings to the table. So what started as only offering games at Origins Game Fair in Columbus, Ohio, has expanded to many other conventions like UConn in Ann Arbor, Buckeye Game Fest in Columbus, Page in Philadelphia, Acadicon in Dayton, just to name a few. Individual GMs have also attended and run many conventions like Con on the Cob, MarCon, Running Gag, etc. For a listing of all of our shows, specifically, you can view them on our webpage, matineeadventures.com, under the Marquee of Events. And you can also click through to our awesome Game Masters on our cast page.
And one of the things that has been really great about Matinee Adventures, and Mike kind of referenced this in how he said he auditioned, is that every single GM who runs under the banner has basically proven themselves as a good GM. So, you know, if somebody is running under the Matinee Adventures banner, it's somebody we know is going to give players a good game. So let's dig into the nitty-gritty of what makes for a good con game. So what type of games are we looking at here?
Preference for convention games is either rules light systems or ones that have really wide familiarity like Dungeons and Dragons. What I think also works well are settings that players are already familiar with, like Star Wars, or that have a strong high concept that the players can easily grasp and immerse themselves in. I also like adventures that lean into the tropes and the familiar themes of that genre. So when people, if I sign up for a Star Wars game, you know they're going to be coming in expecting Jedi and starships and stormtroopers. And I want to make sure I deliver that for them.
Jason, what about you?
So I would echo pretty much all of what Mike said. I believe that known franchises work really well for one-shot game conventions. They allow the players to come to the table with some of the world background and jump in point. I would add that the rules systems that tend to be on the lighter side can benefit as they are less anxiety inducing over how they impact the game and promote more storytelling.
The name of the group, Matinee Adventures, kind of, you know, insinuates cinematic adventures. And I find that's really a big part of a lot of the games that our GMs bring to the table. And like you said, a known property really helps people dive in. We have several GMs that run like Serenity, Firefly games. And I always joke that people just show up at the table wanting a second season episode.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
People want to just play a little more in these worlds. And then when you get into the system that the game is run on, you can have a complicated game, but you have to have a GM who's really good at boiling it down to something simple. We have a GM who runs Shadowrun, which is not necessarily the most the most easy to grasp system for newbies, but he has it boiled down to kind of a good con-friendly version of that game. Do you find that there's a particular structure that works well for your games? Jason, I'll start with you this time.
So personally, I've had continued success with Tom's ABA formula. And so that is action to get the people engaged quickly, investigation in the middle, and then the resolution and a big finale. Of course, depending on the table and the story beats, you could sprinkle in additional action elements. But in general, the ABA has filled my time slots nicely and people seem to like it. I did dabble a little bit in doing a BABA format, but it felt like you could quickly lose player interest in the start if you focus too heavily on investigation. So that is why I really like an opening scene with some action to hook the players and then get them invested in their characters.
And you, Mike?
Back in my organized play days, in my RPGA days, there was a trope we had as game masters that RPGA adventures were three fights and a bag of gold. And that was a joke, but it was true. I don't really write that kind of adventure anymore, but it is still a useful rule of thumb for thinking about how much can I put into an adventure in 4 hours. I try to give my players a couple of combats or conflicts. Not every conflict is a combat. If you play Fate, you know that rule. But I also want to make sure they get a chance to role play, you know, get into their characters, chat in character and so on. One of the tropes of the Star Wars genre, the Star Wars universe, is that I like to use when I can, is the opening, in the Latin term, is in media res, in the media, middle of things. And in an opening like that, you think about the opening of the very first movie, you start with a fight, which gets things off to an exciting start, rather than starting with a briefing or what have you. When I structure my adventures, I also try to build in at least one talky encounter, giving my players a chance to role play as well as those who have them using social skills, knowledge skills, and so on.
What I usually do is I will have my opening, and I will have what I expect to be the finale. I have an idea of where it's going. I have an idea of what that final moment is going to be, but the opening and the ending, and then I have things that I can pull in the middle depending upon what the players are engaging with. You know, I never write a con adventure that has, you know, hard-coded they must hit these 5 points to get to the ending, because that's just setting yourself up for heartbreak and failure, because you're going to have different tables of people moving at different speeds. So it's like, I think pacing is a really big part of it. Now, I just said that I know what my opening is and I know what my ending is. Does that mean I'm running a railroad? Are all con games linear, and does that mean they have to be a railroad?
I don't think they have to be linear, but a linear railroad adventure, or at least something that's semi-linear, like you say, and I know where I start and where I finish, does tend to work better at a convention game than a sandbox adventure. And that's especially true because at a lot of our conventions, we've got players that we as the game master don't know, and a lot of times the players don't even know each other. And some players thrive in sandbox adventures, and some really need what we used to call the flashing neon carrot to take them. Where do I go from here? A good game master and a well-written adventure can help keep players technically on the rails, even if they're never aware that there are any rails. But that said, I also think that you need to be able to let the characters, the players, take things off the rails. If they come up with an idea you never thought of, as far as how to get to that climax, how to complete the adventure, let them do it. And if you know your adventure well and your setting well, that can help you to, you know, call that audible and let them run with that. Use some of those parts that you've prepared to give them an adventure that they chose.
I was once running a game at Origins, I think it was, and I had a player who was kind of refusing to engage with the plot. He kept kind of finding ways to stall and do things back at this one location they were at. And I kept having to adjust it and bring the conclusion closer to where they were physically, to the point that rather than being, you know, several leagues down the road, they'd find the missing caravan, they found it across the river in another town that I planted there, you know, basically just to give everyone a good conclusion to the game. And when he was packing up, he's like, yo, this was fun, but it was way too much of a railroad. And I was just like, I'm not going to commit murder because this is the beginning of the con and I'd really like to enjoy the rest of it. But he had no idea how much of that I had basically adjusted to kind of make it work for that group. What are your thoughts here, Jason?
Yeah, I think pretty much exactly what you were saying, Ange, right? Where a strong GM with a plan can make even the most linear of games feel like players have freedom of choice. I think gentle nudges or being deliberate in how the story is woven together tends to be the key to not railroading your players, right? Designing the adventure in such a way that multiple solutions can get your table to the finale is also important in supporting that freedom. So all the things that you and Mike said.
Yeah, and it's also important, like, never, you know, and I say this all the time, never lock the adventure behind a door. Never, you know, pin things on a particular clue if you're not going to find a way to give that clue to the players.
Mm-hmm.
You have to give the players what they need to continue through the adventure. Also, in the immortal words of Sean Kelly from the glorious Gaming and BS, a railroad isn't bad if you enjoy the scenery.
True.
How much effort should go into making the characters for the players? Jason, I'll start with you on this one.
So the player character are a large part of the story prep work for a GM, especially at a convention or for a convention game. Making the rules, the system, and the PCs playable in such a way that each character is unique and has the opportunity to share the spotlight throughout the adventure is critical. Many of the Matinee Adventures GMs provide rich backstories to their characters to allow the players to really embody those characters. My personal opinion is that I don't always think that is required. A balanced team with thought out roles and how they will function within your story beats seems almost more important to me. I will say specifically that if you place a critical piece of information in the backstory, it is possible that your players will miss that in reading their characters.
Yeah, I've been there. I've seen that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Same here.
What about you, Mike?
My goal is to have the players at my convention games feel like the characters are theirs for 4 hours. To do that, I work on giving the players information and hooks within their characters that let them do that. I make illustrations of the characters. I develop short backstories, motivations, and role-playing hooks. One of the things Fate's great for is in Fate, you have aspects, things that are true about the character. And those are great for helping the player understand, okay, this is what this character is about. I also like to use archetypical characters. For my Star Wars games, that means characters like a Jedi, a Wookiee, a hotshot Corellian pilot, and so on. And I've also made male and female versions of each of those characters so that players can play the gender of their choice. When I first started running these games, I didn't do that. And I had a few comments along the lines of, well, I'd really like to play a Jedi, but I don't want to play a guy. And so I've made those choices available to my players, and they've appreciated it. For those characters for Star Wars, I've been running Star Wars for Matinee for 7 years now. I've been using the same 6 pre-generated characters throughout. But over time, I keep re-examining those characters, tweaking them, tweaking their stunts, tweaking their equipment, by seeing how they get played when people play these characters at conventions, how they've made them their own, and what makes those characters even more interesting and fun to play.
I go back and forth on what I want to do as far as the characters goes, because I have characters that have, you know, fleshed out backgrounds and connections with the other PCs. I have characters where I have just basically a few motivations, mm-hmm. a little bit of a backstory, and then the players can give it a name and a gender and fill in the rest of the details. I have run Powered by the Apocalypse games where you have a playbook and I don't know what the characters are going to be until the players tell me who their characters are. But regardless of the style of character your game is going to have, I think what is really important is that you as the GM have put thought into how those characters are going to integrate into the game. And you have prepared for how those characters are going to be given to the players. Like, if you are going to do kind of a, you know, you fill in the details on this character as far as who they are and what their relationship is with the other characters, that you take the time in your game to make sure that that is established. again, we all run games because we've played bad games before. Nothing annoys me more than sitting down to a game, getting the character, and then the GM just starting and me having no idea who anyone else is at the table. I don't know who that person is. I don't know if, you know, my connection is. I don't know why we're doing this. I'm just here. I'm just doing the thing. The characters are the gateway for your players into your game. And if you haven't put thought into how that character is, who that character is, what the character is doing, any of that, then you're missing what your players are going to be seeing. What about presentation at the table? How much work do you put into your game materials? How professional does it look at your table when your players sit down?
That has increased over time, I'll just say that. I've put more and more time into those materials and develop more materials as I continue to run games for Matinee. I make table tents. I think those are a must-have for a one-shot con game so that everyone at the table can easily see the names and the types for the other characters. I create handouts that I hand out during the game with illustrations of non-player characters, locations, and so on. I use battle maps. I own way too many Paizo battle maps. And I've had custom miniatures made through Hero Forge for each of the player characters in my Star Wars games. If I'm going to have a space combat, I've got tons of X-Wing miniatures. I bring those along. So it's all eye candy for the players. And I've also had custom printed poker chips made for Force Points, which are what I use in the game based on how Force Points have worked in other Star Wars role-playing game systems. So each and everybody gets a Force Point at the beginning of the game through a special poker chip. And I've often had players ask, hey, can I keep this? And absolutely they can. I'm about to print up my second set of Force Points because I've handed out so many. But it's a souvenir they can take for the game. It's a fun memory. And I feel like all of that stuff, it's a lot of stuff. I have to pack a lot of stuff when I run at a con. But it really helps with that immersion and fun for the players. Star Wars is cinematic action. You want it to look visual.
Yep. So Mike does way more than I do. I love it when our GMs have nice character sheets and visuals. And I know that many games are run as theater of the mind, but those occasional props really help to pull your players deeper into the setting, which I think could be immensely helpful.
I'm probably somewhere in the middle there. I will often have, you know, handouts of images of the NPCs that are in the adventure and that type of thing. But I've never gone full on mini or anything, you know, minis or anything like that.
Me neither.
What about time management? What is the key to fitting a game into a 4-hour, less or more, time slot?
I think it's important to be familiar with the game system, preferably something you've run a lot. Though certainly you can run a game that's new for you and your players at a convention. But regardless of if it's a new system or old system for you, you want to have cheat sheets and key notes on game mechanics at hand if you need them, so don't have to waste time by having to look up a rule. You want to be also very familiar with what your player characters can do. You've written them. Make sure you understand. If a player says, I want to use this stunt, you know what it does. It's also important to pre-identify what may be optional in that adventure so you know what you can trim if you need to. Both Jason and you mentioned this earlier. I try to avoid gates, things that can stop progress in the adventure if the players don't think to look at it, or if they just roll terribly. You know, if the entire table fails at a key perception check, you don't want them to end the adventure. Instead, I want to build in ways for them to fall forward or succeed at a cost. And finally, make sure you've got a visible to you, at least, way to keep track of time, and build in an intended break about halfway through so everyone can go to the restroom, get a snack, and so on.
Exactly. Jason?
Precisely what Mike said. I think a lot of time management comes down to knowing your system and how you prepare and run as a GM. So it's kind of a very personal thing. So if the system is crunchy in combat, making sure that you leave enough time to get through all of the action scenes is important. If you're a big over-planner, knowing which scenes you can cut that will keep the adventure coherent and still follow the story is important. And finally, if you're an under-preparer, being sure that your ad-lib doesn't create too many rabbit holes for your table to run down that you miss the major story beats, making your finality either rushed or disjointed from where the table is at. The only other trick that I would share is planning to keep people engaged for about 3 to 3.5 hours. allows flex for delays in starting the bio breaks that Mike mentioned, as well as allows you to let the table breathe through the story instead of racing to get to the end.
I joke when I run Tales from the Loop that I have to factor in either nostalgia time for anyone who is, you know, was a child in the 80s, or having to explain to anyone who was born after the 80s that that is actually how we were. We were feral. We ran around like feral little children doing whatever we wanted, and this is not unrealistic, not for at least that factor of it. Like I said, with the way I set up adventures, you know, I have the stuff in the middle that I can plug and play as needed, depending upon how the players are engaging with it. I strongly recommend, if you are coming to a convention, you know, a larger convention where you know you're going to be running for strangers who have paid to be there to be playing your game, play test it if you've never run it before. You know, it really helps. It really helps you understand where the scenario is working, where it might not be, where you need to beef it up, or so on and so forth. I don't necessarily play test every adventure before I bring it to one of the big cons, but I will at least be comfortable with the system, you know, before I do that. But play testing really does help if you have the time. I would say if it's a small private con type thing, it is totally okay to bring a game to that for the first time. Be like, hey, I'm running this for the first time. You guys are kind of my play testers. But that really should be a private con with friends and people that you can trust, because you're going to want honest feedback. How crucial is it for the players to know a game system before signing up for it?
So for me, this really depends on what kind of player you're targeting the event for. I would say unless you mark the event as requiring the rule system knowledge, plan to have people sit down at your table with zero background experience. If you're looking for those experienced players to make the system really work and make your event sing, beware that you might be reducing your audience pool, which may make people weigh your event against others. And so you might not get as many players as you were expecting.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. Mike?
This is one of the reasons why I choose to run rules light systems like Fate, like Household. It's because I enjoy introducing players to games that I love and create new fans. It's awesome to hear a player at the end of one of my games say, hey, do you know if they are selling this at the convention? Can I go pick this up? I think that to the point Jason just made, if you are going to run a more complex system or powerful or complex characters, like if you're going to run a higher level D&D or Pathfinder adventure, make sure your event description spells that out and indicates that you want players who are experienced in the system so you don't wind up with novices signing up.
You can totally run one of those games where you need the more experienced players, but you need to make sure the audience is there for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be a larger convention like Origins or Gen Con or something along those lines. And you have to be very clear about that in the event description for people signing up for it. And you still may end up with people showing up to the table not having an idea of what that system is. And you're going to have to kind of roll with it because they still got a ticket to be there. What do you think is important for your event description? Have you found that there's any important things that you want to include in that to get the right players to your table?
Certainly, you want to make sure they see what's the game system, what is the setting or the genre. I like to give a teaser about what the adventure will be about, though. When I write adventures where there is a plot twist, you don't want to tip that within the event description. For my Star Wars games, I say Star Wars adventure set during the Rebellion era. So people understand, okay, this isn't during the prequels. This isn't during the Old Republic. This is during the original movies. Also, let people know characters will be provided. Usually not an issue at our conventions, but it does let people know I don't need to worry about doing homework or anything like that. I can come and sit down and get a character.
Jason, what kind of thought do you put into your event descriptions?
I think very, very similar to Mike, where it's really about the, tell them what system I'm using. What's some of the basics about the setting? If you have different eras that you're going to be playing within so that the people know where you're going to be landing on that. And then what's that big story hook? How do I get the person excited and interested to sign up for the event and come and sit at my table, right? And then most of the other convention stuff is handled by their registration systems that'll tend to cover the how experienced does the person need to be? Do they need the rules? Do they need to, you know, bring characters, this or the other thing? But I would think that for, I can almost say 100% of our Matinee Adventures GMs, we bring the characters with us. So characters are provided.
I think the only time I have not had characters is when I was very specifically running a Powered by the Apocalypse system where I had the character playbooks that the players would fill in some information on. But I still had all the materials there for them to go. I have kind of, for most of my games, I've kind of come up with a template where, you know, if it's a Tales from the Loop game, I have the general, like the opening blurb is kind of the hint at what the scenario is going to be. And then I flat out say, this is a game using this system from this company. You are playing kids on bikes in the 80s in a world of weird science. You know, you set the parameters of what the genre is going to be and what the tone is going to be. So they at least have an idea of what they're getting into when they sign up for it. And I will do that with all of my games regardless. I think there is a little bit of a trick to it with how you write your event descriptions to get people at the table. I think if you are running a known property, it's important to put whether or not you need people to be familiar with that known property in there. Because that's not necessarily something that will be covered by the convention's list of information like experience with the game system. You know, like I ran my Horizon Zero Dawn base game at Origins last year, and I very clearly put in there familiarity with the setting is helpful, but not necessary. Because that way it makes people a little more willing to give it a shot if they're curious but aren't experts in the setting. Any last thoughts to share with our listeners?
So running convention games really requires different preparation from your home games, specifically around writing those descriptions that we've just been talking about to hook those players into signing up for your events, then delivering on those story promises that you gave in your descriptions. Be ready to meet and interact with players and styles that might be new to you. A huge part of convention gaming success relies on your ability to facilitate the game and get engagement from the players at your table.
Excellently said.
I'd say one-shots at conventions are a great way, if you're a player, to be able to try out a system or a genre that your home group isn't interested in or no one's familiar with. And playing that one-shot might introduce you to the next system you'll want to run back home.
Yep. Come to conventions. Play games. It's a lot of fun. And then you might decide you want to run games and come back and listen to this episode again. This show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can Patreon back by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. We love doing this, and our patrons help us keep it going. The Gnomecast is part of the Polygamers Podcast Network, so if you're enjoying us, here's another show to check out.
Under the Lamplight is the Streets of Avalon RPG Companion Podcast, where Brett and Chris talk about the setting and the game. The show and the game is about a low-fantasy urban RPG focused on the stories of people living in a city of classism, corruption, and decay, while trying to bring a little light into their lives and the people closest to them.
You can find me at GnomeStew.com, along with GnomeStew on various social media out there, wherever. Mike, Jason, is there anything else you want to give a shout out to today?
Absolutely. So Origins Game Fair is coming up on June 17th through 21st in Columbus, Ohio. It's Matinee Adventures' home convention. This year, we'll be running a total of 66 role-playing game sessions, including games jammed by Ange, Mike, and myself. Event registration opens up April 25th, and you can learn more at originsgamefair.com.
And if you are interested in any of our games, I highly recommend trying to get them on April 25th when Event Reg opens, because our games tend to go fast. So, do you think we were good enough to keep out of the stew, or do we need to run another con game?
We need to run lots more con games.